ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Nightlife Science.
Well, it's no secret that much of our behaviour is governed by hormones. Cortisol is involved in our stress response, and oxytocin, of course, is famous as the love hormone. So it makes sense that our hormones are balanced, I suppose, but to what degree? Hormones are a hot topic these days, particularly amongst influencers, of all people, who suggest that the antidote to feeling a bit ordinary is to take testosterone. But what does the researchers say about the pros and cons of taking testosterone? Wendy Zukerman's the host and executive producer of the Science Versus podcast on Spotify, and is here to chat about this story as well as other science news. Wendy, good evening. Welcome to Nightlife.
Thanks for having me.
Do we need to boost our testosterone?
Some people sure do. Go online and you'll hear that many of us do. The history of men in particular trying to boost their testosterone in particular goes back so far to the before the Bible. But I've got a very fun quote that I thought would set us up for our chat today, which is from a doctor in the 1920s who believed that he boosted his patient's testosterone, and he wrote that after he did this, he had some mad surgery for it, which we don't need to go into, but he said that after he boosted his patient's testosterone, they, quote, changed from feeble, parched, dribbling drones to men of vigorous bloom who threw away their glasses, shaved twice a day, dragged loads up to 220 pounds, and even indulged in such youthful follies as buying land in Florida.
Hey.
Quote.
I love that. I love that. Except it's not quite that simple, is it?
It is not quite that simple. Now, the curious thing about testosterone and the reason that online a lot of people are talking about it is because we are in this strange situation where testosterone levels among men have been dropping over generations. So, for example, there was a study that came out fairly recently that looked at testosterone levels in 1999 in guys that were aged between 15 and 39, and then they looked at sort of that same age range, but fast forward to 2015 and found that the younger generation had lower levels of testosterone than the older generation. It was around 25% less on average. And other studies are finding sort of slightly different numbers, but generally that same trend. This is partly because of endocrine disruptors, but also because of obesity. So we know that fat in your system can play a role in lowering your testosterone levels. And so this has caused a bit of an alarm among people, because they're really wondering, like, we know testosterone is really important. If you have low levels of it, it can lead to low energy, low libido, erectile dysfunction, problems to gaining muscle mass, poor sleep. So it can cause problems. The big question on our show on Science Versus that we looked into was like, well, even though we're seeing sort of generally lower levels of testosterone, for how many men out there are they actually experiencing these issues, these symptoms? And then when they get tested, they have clinically low levels of testosterone. And thankfully, that number is still quite small. So it's only about 6% of the male population that actually might benefit a little bit from taking some testosterone. But as you said, when you said it's not as simple as that, is the studies tell us that, you know, for people who do have clinically low levels of testosterone, I will say, based on the research, it seems like a lot more men think they have low testosterone than actually do. You can get it tested. Even once you get your levels up, I think it's unlikely you'll be indulging in such youthful follies as buying land in Florida.
Land
the
in
benefits,
Florida. No.
Unfortunately, the benefits are fairly mild. So we do see some reduction in depression symptoms for people who have low libido and low testosterone when they get a testosterone bump up. Sometimes it can help with their libido, but it's not as a massive effect as I think some people might like it to be.
No, I suspect not. All right, now tell me about intermittent fasting diets. These were made hugely popular by Michael Mosley and his 5-2 diet. The science on these diets is a bit more circumspect, I think, isn't it?
That's right. So a study just came out which was looking at this question of why do you lose weight when you go on a fasting diet, which I'm sure some of your listeners are going to go, I think I have the answer. If you're not eating, you might lose weight. But from the research perspective, there had been this sort of theory that if you do, so just to kind of take us a step back, intermittent fasting or time-restricted eating is where you squish the window at which you're allowed to eat for maybe something like 8 hours. So you only allow yourself, and you can, you know, depending on which diet you follow, you could not eat between 2 p.m. You could only eat between 2 p.m. and 10 p.m., for example, or you could switch your hours. You know, some people just like to skip breakfast or something, and that would be considered intermittent fasting. And so there was this sort of theory, and you can watch TED Talks where they say, you know, it's not about what you eat, it's about what time you eat. And if you squish all your food into that 8-hour window, you can eat whatever you want, because while you're fasting, your body is doing magical things that allows you to increase your fat burning ability. This study came out, and others amongst it, but I'll just talk about this one because it was just published, took around 40 adults who had obesity and put them on this sort of quite strict diet where they gave them prepared meals, so they knew exactly what calories they were eating and what macronutrients they were eating. And some people were able to eat within they were doing this fasting, so they ate within a 10-hour window. Others were able to eat sort of basically when they wanted, but the calories were all controlled. And what do you think happened, Phil? Who do you think lost the most weight?
I suspect the person who ate the least.
Yeah, well, it was both groups, because they were matching for calories, lost the same amount of weight. But yes, it was the point, what the study found was that it wasn't about smushing how much you were eating into a particular time window or fasting, but it was really about just the overall, if you are eating less calories, that's the main reason you're losing weight.
Yeah, it's a boring conclusion, isn't it? But I mean, it's eternally true. If you want to lose weight, you have to eat less.
It's a big piece of the puzzle. It's a very big piece of the puzzle. I know. And it's like I mentioned, this is not the first study that has found this kind of thing. It is a boring but honest answer. And I just think of all the TED Talks that I watched that were trying to claim that there was something special about fasting, these fasting diets, when it came to weight loss, and I just don't think we're seeing it. But having said that, I do know, and the research does show that some people, if they are looking to lose weight, actually prefer these sort of time restricted eating diets, because it is easier to just, particularly if you're not that into breakfast, if you just skip breakfast and then you can eat whatever you want during those windows. For me, I actually way prefer that to then counting my calories for the entire day. I hate that. It just doesn't work for me. And so I think that if this study might have a nice actual ring to it, and studies like it, because what it also tells you is, this is anecdotal, but I was chatting to a friend who has started this diet because he wants to lose a bit of weight. And he was like, I'm told I'm allowed to drink black coffee in the morning because that's not included as food and I'm still fasting. And I was like, you know, according to these studies, you can drink whatever coffee you have, your milk in it, have your oat milk, have whatever, you know, because it's not about that quote unquote fasting period. It's just not eating as much calories, and there's not that much calories in a glass of milk.
No, that's the thing. And look, the reason ultimately that intermittent fasting diets, as you say, might work for some people is that it does manage expectations about hunger, and you probably end up eating less and therefore you lose weight.
That's right. Because even if you are hungry in the morning or whenever you're picking, the studies tell us you tend to not overeat in the window that you have. Which is an interesting. So I think it's like, you know, time and time again, nutritionists and researchers have told me, like, the best diet in the world is the one that works for you if you're interested in losing weight. Yeah. And I think studies like this really back that up.
Really back that up. That's right. Yes, exactly. I think the science has been here for a bit about this, but people are not wanting to listen because...
It's true. They want to complicate it. Intermittent fasting story. I mean, that's right. There was sort of so much hope that, oh, maybe we can just eat whatever we want if we eat it within these magical time periods. And then more research came along.
Guess what, people? You can't eat whatever you want all the time, all day, because you put on weight. How about this? More and more people are trying cannabis now. For medicinal and other purposes, it's a kind of thing. Many people get anxious or paranoid from cannabis. Enter cannabidiol, is it?
Cannabidiol. That's cannabidiol. CBD.
Yeah, CBD. Purveyors of pot and those who spruik its benefits say that cannabis high in this chemical, CBD, is the answer here. What's the science say, Wendy?
I find it very interesting because there was a lot of excitement about the powers of CBD. I remember when I was living in New York, people were selling it in coffees. You could get a latte sprinkled with a bit of CBD. Mm. It was the greatest trend. And now that pot is legal in large swathes of the United States, you can go to stores and it looks like an Apple store and they'll say, oh, well, you can get this pot that's high in CBD and it'll wipe away your pot paranoia, and this pot that's high in THC and it'll just smack you right down. And so researchers have been looking into this and saying, well, is a high amount of CBD in your pot really the answer here?
What is it? What is it?
Well, it's a chemical that is naturally found in so weed, as the plant is grown, has like a ton of chemicals in it. So sure. THC is one, and that's the thing that famously gets you high and stoned. Yeah. But then there's a bunch of other chemicals, and cannabidiol is one of them. And we know that CBD does have these receptors that it can latch onto in our brain. It's very interestingly, it can help with some kinds of epilepsy. Mm-hmm. So it's not wild to think that maybe it could have these benefits. So a researcher at King's College London in the UK put it to the ultimate test, got 46 people that didn't usually use pot and gave them weed with different ratios of THC and CBD, and then asked them how anxious or paranoid they were. And interestingly, we spoke to him and he said people for the study definitely did get paranoid. So one person thought that the fan above them started to sound like an audience of women talking about them and gossiping.
That's paranoid.
Hmm. That's paranoid. That's right. And so this the researcher, Amir England, ultimately wanted to know, were you less likely to have those kinds of symptoms if you had the pot that was high in CBD? And he did not find that.
Uh-huh.
And other studies have since found the same thing.
Guess what? It doesn't work.
It doesn't work. And it seems to be that the key, if this is something that you are dabbling in, the key to not getting that pot paranoia is just not getting that stoned. So not having high levels of THC.
Who would have thunk? Who would have thunk?
We try to make things complicated, don't we? And then science has to always take us back to basics.
Mm. Who would have thunk? Wendy, always great to talk. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.